ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य चक्षुरुन्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टां स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामह्यब्ददादिं स्वपदान्तिकं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुधापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् सद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादं सहगणललितां श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च. हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशगोपिकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते. तप्तकाञ्चनगौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरि वृषभानुसुते देवि प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये. वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां भावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधार श्रीवासादिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. मत्तपरदरं नान्यत् वर्स 7 मत्तपरदरं नान्यत् किञ्चिदस्ति धनञ्जय मयि सर्वमिदं प्रोदं सूत्रे मणिगणा इव. दिस् वर्स् इस् दि मोस्ट् इम्पार्टेण्ट् वर्स् इन् दट् चाप्टर् इन् दि 7 चाप्टर् फार् दि ज्ञानविज्ञानयोगं. बिकास् थ्रू दट् वर्स् कृष्ण इस् सेयिङ्ग् टु अस् दट् दि there is nowhere where Krishna is not present in the creation. Everywhere there is Krishna is present in everything. It is only that only Krishna exists in this whole creation. We refer separately as matter and spirit, but that also is not a perfect differentiation, because spirit in its most unconscious state is matter. As consciousness develops, we call that a spirit, and when it is in a very dull state, it is matter. Practically, there is only spirit, there is nothing else. And Krishna says that spirit is me. So, we mentioned about this when we talked about that verse, Rasoham apsu kaundeya prabhasmi shishi suryayoho pranava sarvavedesho shabdhake paurusham mrushu. So, few examples Krishna is saying based on this verse. That means, Matta paradaram nanyat kinjidasti dhananjaya mai sarvamidam prodam sutrayam manikana iva. That verse, in order to substantiate that, there are other verses which follows that. So, first thing Krishna says, Resoham apsu kaundeya. The taste of water is me. Whatever taste water has, that's me, Krishna says. Prabhasmi shashi suryayoho. In the sun and the moon, the light that comes from there, the tejasa, it's called, that prabha, is shashi and moon and suryayo, sun, is me. Pranava sarvavedeshu. The letter om, pranavam, of all the Vedas, it's me. Shabdhake paurusham rishu. The sky, the sound, that's me in the sky. And Paurusham Nrushu, among the, in the ability of the men, I am that ability among men. That ability referring to when a person is able to control his mind and senses and able to observe the mind, able to go inward looking in realization for the self. Self-realization, when that happens, Krishna says, there is a special force, urge inside a person to do that. That urge is, Krishna calls it as the Paurusham. Paurusham is that, not anything else, only that. That is Paurusham. A person's determination. Or in other words, when someone is, you see in someone that intense desire for self-realization, that's Krishna. That is Krishna. But we also saw that Krishna's presence is like that. That essentially, if you keep on breaking up things, whatever you see inside, it is also anything inside, that completion of Krishna's presence, to see that practice is this chapter. This chapter is only to help us to practice that Krishna is presence in everything. At the moment, we are not able to perceive Krishna's presence in anything, isn't it? So, how is this possible? How is it possible to perceive Krishna's presence in a natural way in everything? In everywhere that Krishna is present. So, this is only possible, first we have to see Krishna within ourselves. That's the first thing. Only if it is possible to see Krishna presence within ourselves, you can see Krishna presence elsewhere. First thing is to perceive that Krishna's presence within. That's where it starts. And when that is realized, after that the other things can happen. Other things can happen. So, the first thing in the process is to go inward and inquiring this question, who am I? Who am I? What is my real identity? And this is Krishna's presence within ourselves we have to see first. We have to see first. That is by self-realization process, Atma Vicharam, it's called, or the process of thought process, in other words, Atma Vicharam. Shravanam, hearing, mananam, contemplation, and nididhyasanam. Dhyasanam means after contemplation, whatever we have come to the understanding, to hold on to that. That is what it is. Who am I? What is my real identity? And to know that I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I'm not the intelligence, nothing, but purely that awareness of my existence, consciousness in other words, that's me. So this awareness, and when we come to know about that, we'll know that is Krishna's identity. That is Krishna's identity. That's what it means. That's Krishna's identity. So, so the important thing is that to know our own identity, to know our own Swarupam, that there is a center. That center is what Krishna says here. That center is this awareness. It is based on this awareness, all other realizations comes. As I said many times before, that this awareness is the only tangible thing what we have of the presence of the soul inside. Isn't it? Presence of the soul inside. It's only this awareness that is present in us. The awareness that is present in us is the only, the awareness that is present in us is the only way we are aware of the presence of the soul. Because this awareness is where everything begins, isn't it? The presence of the soul. And all other things is very theoretical. But this you cannot deny, the awareness in us. So this point is mentioned here, that in order to know in order for realizing the self, the main center is here. And it mentions that in all three states also, what these three states? Jagrat state, waking state, the dream state and the deep sleep. Whatever that is going through that state is this awareness. is this awareness, isn't it? So, and that is my identity. And when one starts experiencing this inside, then what the Upanishad says is, self-realization happens, and then that is that famous statement in the Upanishads which you may have seen places, Sarvam Kalidam Brahma. Sarvam Kalidam Brahma is Upanishad statement which means everything is Brahma. That realization comes at that point. Without knowing this, without realizing the self within, it is not possible to come to that state. That is the conclusion. Although in Bhagavatam and in the Upanishads also we have to see Krishna present everywhere. That is ultimately the goal. But that won't happen first. First one has to become aware of the self, what we are. Self-realization has to happen. So here is where the experiences beginning. Na bhumir na toyam na tejo na vayu na khamnendriyam va na tesham samuham anegandigatval sushupto kyasiddham sadegavashishtam shiva kevaloham. Na bhumi, not the earth, na toyam, water, na tejas, na fire, na vayu, not the air, not the sky, na indriyam va na tesham samuha, not any of these senses or their combinations. Anegandigatval sushupteokya siddham, because of the variability, which means this limiting adjuncts, or what they call the jagrat sopnam sushupti, the self exists only in deep sleep. That's the only place where it's free from the limitations, isn't it? You can see that in the senses, the mind and the gross body, they are not limiting the self in the deep sleep state. Only in the deep sleep state, it has its own identity. And here it says, Tadego Vashishtam Shiva Kevaloham. That what is left behind after removing the mind, body, senses, intelligence, everything, what remains and it is still present in the deep sleep state, that's me. So, anegandigatval sushuptyoha siddham tadego vashishtam shiva kevaloham. What remains is shivam. Shiva means soul, kevaloham, and I am that. So, here, Krishna is saying here that first thing it has to experience here. So when Krishna says Paurusham, Shabdake Paurusham Nushu, so that Paurusham is present inside us as Uttama Purusham, which I will see in the 15th chapter. Uttama Purushastanya Prakritim, that one. First person, what we come to know about that is Krishna's presence. In other words, first we have to know His presence here. Or what Krishna says here, first we have to give importance to the thought process. Importance to the thought process. And inquire, what is my real identity? Who am I? And what is my nature? What is the... So, when you come to know that it is that false ego inside, and if you give attention to that, that false ego will disappear at the place where it has taken birth. And that, when it dissolves itself, when that false ego dissolves itself, you will notice that there will be that pure consciousness of us. Initially, it is always the identity is with the false ego. But when you question that false ego, who is that false ego, then immediately you will notice that it disappears. Because naturally at that time, the ego goes away from inside when you question. False ego disappears. It's only false ego is present in a conditioned state. But when you go inward looking for the identity, who am I, that question comes, false ego cannot stay there anymore. The pure identity of the soul comes out. And that awareness, satta chitsukham, that is the sachidananda vastu. In other words, satta chitta anandam, that consciousness, avabhavadam. Krishna says here that then where it's originating from that, and that will develop strongly, that awareness will come out strongly once we continuously question this false ego, once we continuously question this false ego. And why that is spoken like that is, this is Krishna's greatest opulence. If you will come to know that, in the later on, in the 10th chapter, I think, the opulence of the Absolute, that chapter, Vibhuti. In Vibhuti Yogam, so many opulences are spoken, Krishna's opulences. But the greatest opulence of Krishna is this Krishna's presence in every living entity. That is the greatest opulence. And that presence is what is spoken here. And that is the greatest opulence. And that is the first experience of Krishna. Only if you experience Krishna inside, only after that you can see Krishna elsewhere. You can see Krishna elsewhere. They give the example, just from this gingerly oil, they take the oil out of the gingerly, the sesame seeds. The oil is present in the sesame seeds. Similarly, in yogurt, the butter is present there. But it has to be taken out by constantly churning that, isn't it? From the yogurt, you have to churn and get the butter out. Similarly, from the sesame seeds, you have to grind that and to get the oil out from there. Similarly, in our experience also, Anubhava Mandalam, it is called. Anubhava Mandalam means that plane where we are experiencing everything. At the moment, it is present there in the form of Jiva, Jiva Bodham, Jiva Rupam. Krishna is saying here, isn't it? Jiva Bodham Mahabaho Eyedam Dharide Jagat. Krishna said that before. That Jiva Bodham Mahabaho. Jiva Bodham, you cannot see anywhere else. You cannot see anywhere else. Krishna is present inside as Jiva Bodham. Krishna has become Jiva Bodham and present inside us. And if we see that Jiva Bhudam as Krishna's form, then in all other all other creation also we will be able to see. That is why we say we have to perform this Atma Vicharam. It is called Atma Vicharam. Yanis perform this Atma Vicharam. Without even thinking about the soul, simply performing sadhana is not good enough. Continuously performing sadhana, but without putting any effort to understand what the soul is. And direct our attention towards the soul in a way that is spoken in the Upanishads. So, what is the goal of all the sadhana? Is this contemplation process, to inquire who am I, who am I? And to think that what is my identity, what my real identity is. And that inquiry will eventually develop into experience. Inquiry will develop into experience. And in order to create that stimulation inside for self-realization, satsangam. Satsangam is for that purpose. To create that stimulation inside, how to reflect on the soul. That's all it is. That's why satsangam is necessary. That's why satsangam is necessary. Matta paradaram na anyad kinchidasti dhananjaya. Mayi sarvamidam pradam sutre manigana iva. That is the most important verse in this chapter. So, the whole science of Bhagavad Gita is spoken in that verse. And this is a verse which we have to take very carefully and analyze it thoroughly. So, Parameshwaral Paradaram Anyad Karanandaram Kinchit Na Asti Na Vidyade. Where is Krishna and where is Ishvara? This inquiry has to begin. So, what is the conclusion? What is the conclusion? Conclusion is this. Where is anything where Krishna is not present? What is not Krishna? And where is something where Krishna is not present? And is there something which is separated from Krishna? Paradaram na anyad kinchid asti dhananjaya. Paradaram na anyad kinchid asti dhananjaya. Nothing else exists outside Krishna. Nothing exists outside Krishna. So, asti. Everything has come from Krishna. Nothing exists outside Krishna. And the explanation of this particular principle is what's coming in all the many verses from now on. It's only to tell us that nothing exists outside Krishna. That is the main thing. There is a example of this in the Bhagavadam when you see Hiranyakashipu and Prahlada together. Isn't it? Hiranyakashipu and Prahlada together. There you will notice there that the Hiranyakashipu and Prahlada, they are having a conversation. And Hiranyakashipu is asking Prahlada, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? He's asking that question, isn't it? Are kwasau kwasau? Where is he? Hiranyakashipu got very upset with Prahlada, isn't it? Pulled the sword out and he says, Are kwasau kwasau? Sakala jagadalma haririti prabhindesma. So Prahlada says, Sakala jagadalma haririti. There is nothing in this creation except Krishna. This was Prahlada's reply. Hiranyakashipu is asking, Are kwasau kwasau? Where is he? He says, Where is your Vishnu? Prahlada says, Only he is there, is nothing else apart from him in this whole creation. Prabhindesmastambham chalida karavalo didisuta. That as soon as Hiranyakashipu is asking Prahlada, if it's like that, is he there in the pillar? In this pillar, is he there? Prabhindesmastambham chalida karavalo didisuta. Saying this, he pulled the sword out. If it is there, let me see him. Where is he? Adapashad Vishnu. Immediately Vishnu comes from inside. Adapashad Vishnu. Navadidom ishosmi sahasam. What can I say? That he came out from inside at that point, isn't it? When he pulled the sword out, he hit the pillar. And pillar crumbled. And from inside, Narasimha Murthy came. Asamamurthy came from inside. So still Hiranyakashipu was not convinced that he is present everywhere. Just to show this principle, Matta Paradaram Nanyat Kinjidasti Dhananjaya Mai Sarvam Midam Pravadam Sutrayam Niganayiva. That word, Matta Paradaram Nanyat Kinjidasti Dhananjaya. Nothing else exists in this creation outside Krishna. Krishna means the soul. And the soul, and the proof of that is in the Bhagavadam like this, that when Hiranyakashipu hit the pillar crumbled and Narasimha Murthy came out from inside. Many great devotees speaks about that in different ways. They say that Krishna was waiting inside. Just like, you know, people who perform drama, they dress up and wait for their scene to come. How they are waiting. After they are dressed up in the particular part they have to play in the drama, they'll be waiting in the behind this curtain, isn't it? When their scene comes, they have to enter into the stage. Similarly, Krishna was dressed up in the Narasimhamurthy's form and waiting inside the pillar to come out. So when Hiranyakashipu, with all his passion, he was jumping and pulling the sword out and showing all his anger towards Prahlada, and saying, Are, kwasau, kwasau, where is he, he says. So Prahlada is saying, he is only one there, there is nobody else except him. That was his answer. So here, he says to him that everything what I see is only Krishna, nothing else. Hiranyakashipu asked that question to Prahlada. Where do you get the strength to talk like this nonsense? He says to him. So what did he say? The same person who given you the strength to talk, is the same person who is talking through me. That's why he said at that time, isn't it? Pita shrunven bala prakaramakhilam tuel sudibaram rushanda praheinam. Kulahadaka kaste belamiti belam me vaikunda tavaja jagadan jabi sabalam sa eva trilokyam sagalamidi dhiroya magadil. Pita shrunven bala prakaramakhilam. When Prahlada heard father's this questioning, tuval sudhi param, and in that anger, rushanda prahainam kulahadaka kaste belamiti. You are a bad seed in this race. Hiranyakashipu says about Prahlada, you are a black spot in our family tradition. Very proud of his tradition, isn't it, family? So he says to him, Balamme Vaikuntha. Prahlada says, that power, who has given you this strength to roar at me like this? It's the same person giving me the strength. There is no two sources of power. There's only one source. Source is only one. That is what the important thing. There's only one source. And the same power from the same source is coming through you and coming through me. Hiranyakashipu cannot see that. Hiranyakashipu is seeing they're all different. Different, different, different. Everything is different for Hiranyakashipu. For Prahlada, everything is one. Prahlada is saying the source is one, and from the same source is coming through you in one form and coming through me in another form. That's all. There is no difference. Balam me Vaikuntha. Your balam is also Vaikuntha, Krishna. My balam is also Krishna. That's all. If you understand this, that's why that verse is important. Matta paridaram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya. There is no other power in this world. We fight in this world all, each other. For what? The same power is fighting through different people in different ways. It's because this matta paridaram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya is not there. Therefore, if this is the knowledge that has to be propagated, isn't it? There is no point in forming United Nations and all other things. It won't work because that's all based on the body completely. What will work is this knowledge, the knowledge of the soul. Because when we understand the soul is the force, soul is the force that is manifesting in everyone. And it is the same source from all the power is coming from. And it is that power that is causing this mutual problem, fighting and all other confrontations in this world. It's coming from the same source. If you understand that, where is the question of any fight? Where is the question of any fight? It's only one force present in this creation, and that force is Krishna. So this knowledge is the dhira. The one who knows this, he is a hero. He is a hero. He knows what is the right thing. So nothing exists outside Krishna. This always should be, we should bear in mind. And this courage, that is called knowledge. This is called knowledge. Not otherwise fighting a war and fighting each other, none of them is considered to be courage. This awareness of this knowledge is courage, which Prahlada had. That's why Prahlada was able to face that situation with Hiranyakashipu. Because his complete conviction and no doubt about it, that there is only Krishna present in this creation. It's coming in the form of, he mentions here, it's coming in the form when Prahlada had to experience this, that matta paridaram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya my sarvamidam prodam sutre manigana iva. He says, one who is completely established in this knowledge, he is dhira. He is courageous because he has seen the truth. Isn't it? He has seen the truth. That means the whole source of all power in this creation is Krishna. And the power which comes through in different people in different forms is coming from the same source, Krishna. Once you know that, Krishna says that he is dhira. He is dhira. He is courageous. So, whatever we see in this world, that's all Krishna. So, as soon as you say everything, we say there are so many different objects in this world. And all these different objects, Krishna gave the example here, just like a pearls in a thread. All these different objects in this world, different creations, different planets, different living entities, everything is like a pearl through which this thread Krishna passes through. Krishna passes through. So, therefore, it is called sutram, isn't it? Sutram means what? Thread. So, because Krishna is present in everyone in that way, he is called a Sutratma. You know that word, Sutratma. Sutratma comes from that. Because he is present as a sutram in everything. You will see few terminologies like that, sutra-atma, pratyag-atma, nyapti, different things based, same thing, but spoken according to the function, the way it is spoken. So, it's a simple thread. And that is what it says here, that yatiryangmaradevadhavi ahamityandaspudagrihyadem yadbhasa hrdayakshadeha vishaya phandi soto chetanam tam bhasebihi darkamandalanibham spurtim sada bhavayan yogi nirvrudamanaso hi guriritesha manisha mamam yatiryangmaradevadhavi ahamityandaspudagrihyadem. That from the lowest living entities right up to the demigods, inside everyone this awareness is existing. I am, isn't it? Animals also have, even the worm, he is also conscious of his existence that is present in them. So that awareness which is present in inside, and due to the presence of which the heart, the senses, the body, everything becomes alive. Just got life because of that awareness. It is that awareness that keeps us going, isn't it? Otherwise, we are not aware of anything else. It is because of the awareness. And but just like the sun, which is covered by the clouds, similarly, the soul is covered by everything what we see. See, that awareness, we are not able to be constantly able to perceive that. Perceive means we are not conscious of that all the time. Why? Just like the sun is covered by the clouds, similarly, this world, what we are experiencing, is covering that soul. It's covering that soul. So, that person who is not disturbed by the perceptions of the senses and who do not lose that awareness all the time, he is the realized soul. Is the realized soul. Yat yatiryang naradevadabi ahamityandaspuda grihyateim. That always is present inside. I am. Isn't it? Yat bhasa hrdayeksha deha vishaya bhandi svato chetanam. That he is, because of his presence only, that we are aware of these three states. Because he is present there. Otherwise, how do we know Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti? We won't know that. Because he is present there. Tam bhasebihi at arkamandalanibham spurtim sada abhavayan. That is called as spurti. Spurti is the word used in the Shastra. This aham, 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 it is a kind of thing from inside. It is constantly projecting outside. Therefore, it's called spurti. Spurti. And if we give attention to that, yogi nirvrudamana sohi guriritesha manisha mama, one who has given attention to that, he is manisha mama. He is the my spiritual master, he says like that. So sutralpa aham aham, that means whether it's amoeba, whether it is an elephant, a demigod, a whale, or wherever it is, it is all this aham is present in everything. Aham is present in everything, in all living entities. So, everywhere we can, including the demigods, we can see here. We can see this. What is that? Very clearly, very explicitly, what is that present without giving doubt to anyone, that this presence is, has to be acknowledged. This presence has to be acknowledged. You can say God doesn't exist. That you can say, because you don't know yet, isn't it? We don't know that God exists or not. And you can also say, I may or may not believe in that. That choice we have been given. But you cannot deny your own existence. Is it not? You cannot deny your own existence. If you deny that, then everything is finished. So, this is what Krishna is saying, sutram. This is where sutralma becomes important. Sutralma is Krishna's another form, is taken seriously because of this. In our present state, we can deny existence of God. We can deny existence of an Ishvara, controller of everything, because we are not experiencing it. But sutralma you cannot deny. That is always, awareness is there. Everyone's body is different, mind is different, intelligence is also different. But Sutralatma, that experience, Spuda Drishyate, it's always in everyone. Nobody can deny that. That is the same. That is same in everyone. The Sutralatma is the same in everyone. Mind, body, intelligence, they are all different. For everybody it is different. Different people have different body. Spuda Drishyate. So, once we touch that Sutralatma, we have touched everything. That is that thread. That is going through everything. Just like if you touch the thread, you have touched the garland. Similarly, if we touch this through our subtle intelligence, and when he becomes Andharmukhatvam. Andharmukhatvam means inward looking going inward. And one who realizes that, and that situation, that satta, that experience, consciousness, that experience, even intelligence cannot touch that. Intelligence cannot touch that. You can see how why it is spoken like that is, intelligence can only think, isn't it? Intelligence can think. For example, intelligence can think about, say, hydrogen, oxygen. You can think about that. You can also think about any sweets, laddu or jalebi, whatever it is. It can think about that. But it cannot experience laddu, can it? It can only think about laddu. Its shape, form, and how it's made. All those things it can think about, but it cannot experience laddu. You cannot experience laddu. So, similarly, when you say you are doing mathematics, intelligence can do the mathematics, and it can also give you an answer to the problem, but it cannot touch the number. It cannot touch the number. But if you look carefully, if you think about this, intelligence can touch the soul. Now, this is another interesting thing. We mentioned before that body, mind, intelligence has nothing to do with the soul. If you look into the 6th chapter, Krishna mentions there, buddhi grahyam ati indriyam, he says. Senses cannot touch, buddhi can touch. Grahyam, it says. The word used is grahyam. Buddhi grahyam. Why does he say like that? The reason is this, that buddhi grahyam ati indriyam. In other words, actually intelligence is not different from the soul. Again, do not get confused with the brain. Brain is the material intelligence, which is making material calculations, a material understanding. That's different. When Krishna says, buddhi grahyam atindriyam, buddhi can touch the soul when buddhi is directed towards the soul, you will realize that buddhi is not different from the soul. That realization will come at that stage. It is just a wave that arises from the self. The intelligence is a wave that arises from the self. From there you can see clearly it is not the brain we are talking about. The intelligence is a different thing. That's a different thing. So we can subside back into the, it can go back into the same source where it came from. Where it came from. Svatmanam cha yathavetum, svatma buddhir pravartade, salpmakara tadha bhutva, prithak pratitishtati. Prithak pratitishtati. So, when this intelligence turns inward looking to know the soul, and it becomes like the soul. It becomes like the soul. This subject of mind, intelligence, soul, we have some unusual understanding in our own head. We have formed some different opinion. For example, jiva, we say it's a soul. There is a mind, separately we call it, isn't it? But if you study Bhagavad Gita, you will see later, the mind and jiva is not different. They're one and the same. Mind is jiva. Again, why is it like that? Because in jiva state, it's only the mind that exists. The soul is such a subtle thing, that we have to keep on talking about these things all the time. And one day we will filter it out and understand that what this soul is. Till that time we have to discuss different sides of Bhagavad Gita, because Krishna talks about it in different ways in different places. If you go into the 15th chapter, Krishna is saying, Mamayvamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bodha Sanatana. Manashashtani Indriyani Prakritistani Karshadi. Now, when one study Bhagavad Gita with mind and intelligence, when we apply our intelligence and we studying Bhagavad Gita in that way, what will happen is, intelligence has got this one problem. It wants to put everything separately into blocks. That's our very nature is like that, isn't it? Because that's how we have grown up in this world. Every time, because it makes easier, we feel, if you keep it separately. If you mix it up all together, then it's very complicated for us. So we want to keep everything separate. This is very inherent in all of us when we analyze things. Even when you are given a mixture of problems, what do you do first thing? You separate them out first, isn't it? To solve the problem. You think that's the easiest way. That's the way for intelligence to do. Intelligence like it that way. Intelligence capacity is like that. But when you come to the soul, you can't do that. Because it's a one thing that's coming in different forms and different shapes at different times. It comes as mind at some time. Sometimes it's called the subtle body. Sometimes it's called jiva. Sometimes it's called intelligence. And it's all coming from the same source, the soul. And we don't know the soul. That's the problem. But to understand the soul, we have to understand all these peripheral things, like the mind, like the jiva, like the intelligence, and all such things. So that's what it says here. Then, so nothing exists outside that soul. That is the knowledge. So, when we come to understand that the intelligence, and this will happen, when the mind and intelligence start going inward, looking for the soul, inquiry begins, in other words, inside, you will notice this one thing, that it all remains as the same one substance. So what we do, meditation, Vedantam, Vicharam, or discussions, Nididhyasanam, whatever we say, it's that thing only. That intelligence has gone inward looking, Andarmukhatvam. It's called Andarmukhatvam. Andarmukhatvam means introspection, inward, going inwards. Aham, aham, we will start giving attention to the soul at that time. Attention to the soul, aham, aham. Aham asmi, aham asmi, aham asmi. This aham, aham, aham is what eventually becomes aham brahmasmi. So it starts aham asmi and then eventually it becomes aham brahmasmi. That's how that realization comes later. So, different acharyas have spoken about it in different ways. Some people, because also Sri Parvati mentioned as Ambiga. Ambiga is Jnana Swarupini, personification of spiritual knowledge. Jnana Swarupini referred to her. So, she is married to Lord Shiva. Acharya Swamiji says, I have become Lord Shiva's father-in-law because I have given my intelligence has been married to Lord Shiva. So he's married her. In a poetical language, he has spoken like that. So, I will marry her to you and please offer her, take her and hand it over to the soul. It's a prayer form spoken to Lord Shiva. So, when it becomes inward looking, eventually what will happen is, that inquiry will end up in who is this person inside whom we are inquiring after, and the intelligence will go and disappear in the soul. It will go and dissolve itself in the soul. There, at that point, we have touched the soul. We have touched the soul. Initially, because we have no experience of this self-realization and the whole thing looks very complicated, but actually, if we give time and practice this on a regularly, it will give us some understanding that the so-called mind intelligence, they are just disturbances in this body. Not just disturbances in the body, in the sense that they are existing there, except that it helps you to do your vyaharam, transactions in this world. In self-realization, they are not of much help. Only thing is, you have to learn to keep them under, not to allow them to pop up. If you stop them from doing that, then self-realization becomes a lot easier. So that is why they say, Andarmukhatvam is necessary. You have to direct them inward, both the mind and the intelligence. If you allow them to go out into the world, they'll create chaos. They'll create confusion. But if you allow them to go inward, looking, although they on their own won't bring us that realization, they will disappear and then you will experience the soul. That is the system. That is the system. So the more we withdraw from the world, our attention, and we take it inward looking, the faster the realization comes. Every great jnani, if you look at, you will see, although they are looking, they are not looking at the world. They are looking inwards. Eyes are open. Eyes are open. But if you look into their... But they are not seeing anything. They are not seeing anything. That is that state. That is that state. Jnanis, you can see, even if you look into Mahatmas, in their very photograph, if you look, you will notice this. They are looking at this world, but they don't seeing anything. They are seeing the... Because the mind and intelligence has gone inward long ago. And body is performing its activity in this world, whatever the body is doing. They are not giving any serious attention to that. Attention is always inside there. That is what he's talking about. So, here, only if when we touch this sutralma inside, then we become everything. Because that sutram is present in everyone, isn't it? That same sutram, the thread, is present in everyone. Only when we touch that, this equality will come in this world. Equality. If everybody touches that, equality will come. On a physical plane, equality is not possible. On a physical plane, that is not possible. You can talk about it, but it will never happen. They tried very hard, didn't they? The communism tried that, to bring equality on a bodily level. And capitalists and the developed countries, they are trying to bring equality through the process of development. They say if you develop everybody, then everyone will become a developed country and everybody will be equal. And for that purpose, they have created all these United Nations for economic development and all that kind of things. But nothing will work. That is the principle. Only in the subtle platform, this realization has to happen first. That means through the na kinjidasti dhananjaya. Na anyat kinjidasti dhananjaya, Krishna is saying here, isn't it? For example, if you look, never in the case of body, as far as the strength of the body or other capabilities are concerned, or as far as work is concerned, never everybody can be equal. Everyone has different capacity to work. Everyone has a different bodily strength. Everyone has a different mental strength, intellectual strength. Everything is different from one person to another. So on a physical level, socialism will never be effective. It will never be effective. And this is the reason for that. What is the reason? So because everyone is different in their mind and intelligence. And but when everyone is seeing all on a spiritual platform, so then it is possible. Then it is possible. If everyone has touched the thread, then on an equal level we can live in this world on an equal platform. Because everyone is in touch with the thread. So long as one is not touched with that thread, sutralma, it is not possible to come to that state. For example, that to bring everyone equal is not an intelligent idea. It's not an intelligent idea. A person is hungry. Another person is not hungry. Now if you insist that both persons should eat the same quantity of food, that's not possible. One who is hungry will eat the food. One who is not hungry cannot eat the food. Isn't it? So similarly, one who has got a lot of money, plenty of wealth, if you give him money, he has no value for it. But when one is very poor, if you give him some money, he will have a lot of value for it, isn't it? He is in need of that. So you can't bring everyone equal on a physical plane. Physically, everyone is different, whether it is wealth, whether it is health, mind, intelligence, thought power, everything is different with everybody. But this, in the deepest core of heart, when you touch the deepest core of that soul, you become one with all. When you are touching that, you have become one with everybody else. If people, everyone touches that core inside the Sutralpa, then he is in contact with everybody at that time. Till then, you are separate. You are always separate. Till you touch that. Till you touch that Sutralpa, we are always separate in the physical plane. In the physical plane. And if you have touched there, then you have touched the thread. That is what Krishna is saying here. That once you touch that thread, you will know only the thread exists. Only the thread exists. Matha paradaram nanyat kinjidasti dhananjaya. In other words, once you have touched the thread, or once you have realized the soul, you will know that nothing exists outside the soul. There is nothing called material existence. Where is the material existence? It is spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Brahma's glorifications. There is a verse in the Brahma's glorification. Brahma will talk about that. Brahma says there that the, it is the 10th canto, you will see in the 14th chapter. Brahma says, evam vidham tvam sakalatmanam api svalpanam almalpadaya vichakshade gur varkalabdho upanishal su chakshusha yede tarandiva bhavan rudambudhim. There is about 70 verses in Brahmastuti, Brahma's glorification. When Brahma experienced Krishna's power through that pastime, well sustained, when you know that story, what Brahma, when he stole the cows and wanted to teach Krishna a lesson, isn't it? That famous pastime in the 10th canto. What that pastime has given us is this great glorification of Brahma. Nowhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in knowledge, renunciation and bhakti, a prayer equal to Brahma's prayer. It is so powerful that prayers are. So that is why that prayer is given so much important in the Bhagavatam. It's a long prayer from Brahma. Because when Brahma was glorifying Krishna, after all, his standard is so high, isn't it? He's the first personality who was given instruction. Krishna has given instruction. So the standard also is incomparable with the position of Brahma. That's why Brahmastuti is so important. Nomi Dyade Brahma Bhushi Tadidambaraya. It begins with that. Lot of very, very nice verses in there. Importance of knowledge. Importance of bhakti. Importance of renunciation. Brahma has spoken at such high level glorifying Krishna in that Brahmastuti. Brahma's glorification. That's why it's so important. That's why he says here, evam vidhatvam sakalatmanamavi svalpanam alma almataya vichakshate guruvarkalabdho upanishalsu chakshusha yede tarandiva bhavamrudam bhudim. Upanishalsu chakshusha means through the eyes of Upanishads. That truth, what is realized by the yogis through the Upanishads, through the eye of Upanishads, that is what I am seeing here. Brahma is saying like that. So here you will see that the in the Bhagavatam, why that verse is important is that every one of us is experiencing the misery of material life, isn't it? Miseries of material life. It is called samsara, material existence. If you remember the glorification of spiritual master, what does it say? Samsara bhavan analitha loga. The first verse. Samsara means material existence. So samsaram is also compared to what? Dhavanala. Dhavanala means forest fire, isn't it? So, glorifying the spiritual master who extinguishes that forest fire of material existence. That's what that verse is talking about. So, this samsara, material existence, is distress. It's just like as though you are caught up in the deep sea, in the ocean. In the ocean. So, you have taken a boat and you are trying to cross that sea or ocean of material life. You have taken a boat and you are trying to cross that. But the boat has got a hole underneath that. It has got a hole. So, and the water is getting into the boat through that hole. After that, what will happen? The boat will sink, isn't it? Or boat will sink. Boat completely sunk and fell in, and you started crying at that time to escape from that sea, from the deep sea. Who will come? Nobody will come. When you look either all sides, it's only unlimited ocean everywhere, unlimited sea everywhere. So, no way to escape from that through all your logic. Whatever logic you can use at that time, you see no choice, no chance of escaping from there. So, jiva's state in this world, living entity's condition in this world is like that. In the material existence is like that. You are looking everywhere how to escape from this, and water is coming everywhere in the boat from all sides and unable to escape from that. So this is our state. It is that time that spiritual master comes. Spiritual master comes. What did the spiritual master do? He did not dry up the ocean, nor he take the living entity away from there. He put some in the eye, that medicine by which he can see the things. Why? Because only in illusion we experience this misery of this material life, isn't it? So through knowledge he removed that illusion, and then when you looked, you saw there is no ocean at all. There is no such thing as an ocean existing. Brahma Stuti will tell you all these things. Very nicely Brahma explains that. In one stage Brahma is saying to Krishna that so many people have come. When they came and they stood there, they saw this great ocean standing there. And seeing that, they got frightened. When they say ocean means this samsara, samsara samudram, material existence, is that ocean. This is all for people who are thinking a little higher, not for who are always thinking about the body. These people who experience the miseries of material life and seeing that, why I am subjected to all these miseries of life. I have a body which is giving trouble, mind is giving trouble, and adhyalpam, adhibhautikam, adhidevikam, all kinds of, this is all samsaram, isn't it? Material existence. So there Brahma is saying that many, many great devotees and mahalmas, they had come and they came and stood at the seaside, in the banks of the ocean, and they looked at the ocean and they got frightened. They got frightened how to cross this. And then they caught hold of the boat and they started going to cross the ocean. But when they reached the other side, they left the boat on the side where they started. That's how it is spoken in the Brahma Stuti. This is a very interesting way he says, Brahma says, why? Because the ocean has no reality. There was nothing to cross. Only it was an illusion in the head that I had to cross this material existence. So that's what he says here, that he put this medicine in the eye, bhava anjanam budhim anradam budhim, because the ocean itself is false. It's not a real ocean. So one who has touched that sutram, that thread, then there for him samsara material existence doesn't exist. Once you have realized that soul, then there is no samsara dhavan analitha loga. That's over. That samsaram is finished. In other words, once who have known the tattvam, one who has known this tattvam or realized that nothing exists outside the soul, separate from the soul, there is no material existence, there is no world, there is no Ishvara, there is no man, there is no woman, There is no husband, there is no wife, there is no brahmachari, grahastham, vanaprastham, sannyasam, nothing. Nothing exists outside the soul. All diseases are coming from there. Matta paradaram nanyat kinjit asti dhananjaya. Nothing exists. Not separately from that. When you hear all these things, it may look very poetical, all this. This is all poetry that we are talking about. But if at the moment you can enjoy it as poetry for the moment till you experience the reality. That's all you can do. You have to enjoy it as a poetry only. Because what can we do? Our ajnanam, avidya, ignorance is so deep rooted inside us. Nothing we are experiencing. Shastram is saying so many things. But nothing is in the experience stage. Therefore, it's a, so, but the fact is, at least in imagination, imagine a state like that and enjoy it, even if you can't really have it. At least imagination of that state in your own mind. You can imagine that there is a state exists. Because our real existence, the reality is that, unma. Unma means the truth. Is like the of our astitum, our existence is like that. And if you keep on performing vijara, vijara means reflection on this, then if you keep on getting a little bit clarity, eventually the satyam will get revealed to us, that that is the truth. It may be a long journey, long haul, but if you keep on at it, one day the truth will get revealed to us. This is our real state. So, when we are in the world, in the body, or in other words, sutra mani ganaiva, isn't it? So if you are in the money means that pearl, what is inside. If you are in that state, there will be difference. There is no point in saying there is no difference. Difference is there. That is why when in Bhagavadam, when Narada Maharshi instructed Prahlada, what did he do? How did he instruct Narada Prahlada? He instructed two things. One side dharmam, other side jnanam. Both. Jnanam and dharmam. Both simultaneously he instructed Prahlada. Why is it like that? Because in vyavaharam, in transactions, you have to follow dharmam. Dharmam is necessary. Vyavaharam, in vyavaharam, I am there, you are there, man is there, woman is there, male, female, everything exists. Everything separate. Family is there, everything is there. It will not become one. It is not possible to become one. Here, you can't bring this sutram into it. Sutram is present in everyone, and that sutram is the same thing. But when it comes to vyavaharam, vyavaharam means transactions, this knowledge you can't bring into it, because there, the reality is dharmam is important. That's why Narada Maharshi instructed Prahlada dharmam and jnanam both. If you look into Bhagavatam, you will see in the 7th canto. Bhavadvaidam sada kuryat kriyadvaidam na karhichet. He says, inside the knowledge should always be there. Bhavadvaidam. That is what it is. In bhavam, inside, you should be always aware of your sutram state. That sutralpa state. That we should be always aware of that. In your bhava. Bhavadvaidam sada kuryat. Always it should be there. Kriyadvaidam na karhichet. In your actions in this world, this should not come. That should not come. They are two separate things, in other words. They are two separate things. So, bhavadvaidam sada kuryat. Kriyadvaidam na karhichet. Yoga Vasishtam. Vasishtha Maharshi is saying to Ramachandra this one particular thing. So, keeping the knowledge inside properly, safe, without disturbed by that, anything, keeping that knowledge inside, external transactions has to go on in this world. Kriyadvaidam sada karhichit. Sakarhit. Kriyadvaidam karhichit. So, in realization, it should be there, not in transactions. In experience, it should be there, but not in the transactions. In realization, anubhuti, it exists. So, because if everything is one, if I start saying my bank account and your bank account is all one, it won't become. That is transaction, isn't it? That's answer. There you can't bring this realization into it. The saying, isn't it? My money is my money, your money is also my money. That is Advaitam. But Advaitam you can't bring into practical life. There the knowledge has to stay inside. But practical transactions you have to carry out whatever the world, that there dharmam prevails, not the knowledge. Dharmam prevails there. That's the important point. So there knowledge will not work. Knowledge will not work. And that is why we say knowledge is avyavaharam. It is not for business. Knowledge is not for business. So, and only what it does is, in your realization level, anubhuti mandalam, it will free you from the ignorance. It will free you from the ignorance. Unconditionally, it will make you free. Unconditionally, it will make you free. But in vyavaharam, dharmam is necessary. Vyavaharam, dharmam. Dharmam means, whatever actions we are doing, whichever way it has to be done, it should be done. In the proper way, it should be done. And when this knowledge becomes powerful inside, becomes strengthened inside, then what will happen is, nobody will have to tell you how to conduct the business in this world. When the knowledge gets strengthened inside, nobody will have to tell you how to walk in a dark room. It will tell you how to do that. If there is light inside, without knocking here and there, you will be able to get through. And then you will know what dharma means. What is dharma means? If this knowledge is inside, you will know what dharma is in life. What dharma means life. Generally what we do, we give importance to dharma. But that way it is difficult to find the proper action in all situations in this world. What is the right thing to do? Krishna also says that, isn't it? In the Bhagavad Gita, if you remember earlier, Krishna says that about karmam, while discussing about karmam, he says there that Arjuna, this karmam is a very complex thing, isn't it? And he says to Arjuna, that the karmam, the ways of karmam are very intricate, he says there, isn't it? Very intricate. Nobody knows. Even great learned people gets confused about karmam. About karma, the right thing to do in different situations. What is the right thing to do? So therefore it is very very confusing to everyone. But Krishna's point is that if you have this knowledge inside, according to the strength of that knowledge, the proper way to perform dharma will also become clear because of its power inside. That knowledge will guide you through how to execute the dharma in this world properly. That is the one point Krishna says here. That just like the body, when you look at the body, each of us, our own body is different. Our body is different. But when you go and touch the soul is the same in everyone. The soul is the same everyone. So in a mysterious way, I am operating through you. I can operate through you in a mysterious way. In other words, when we come, all of us come to that platform of the soul, realization of the soul, what's happening? The same source is operating in everyone. Isn't it? Same source is operating in everyone. Therefore, that is why it is said, when a jnani realizes the truth, it is auspicious for the whole world. It's auspicious for the whole world. If one person becomes self-realized, it's auspicious for the whole world. Just like as soon as you touch the thread, you touch the whole garland. Similarly, if one person becomes self-realized, he is auspicious for the whole world. But it's not like this, just that you can give it in the newspaper advertisement that somebody has realized herself. It's not like that. And how it has happened. So that is not the idea behind it. But self-realization comes to the stage that he realizes in everything the truth. His realization alone brings a auspicious situation for everybody else. So once it so happened, Krishna came in front of a devotee. Krishna came in front of a devotee. Krishna says to the devotee, "I want to give you something, some benediction," he said. So the devotee said, "I don't want any benedictions." So Krishna says, "Please ask something." Krishna kept insisting about that. So the devotee says to Krishna, "Wherever I go, let there be auspiciousness everywhere. Let everyone be happy and peaceful with that. Suppose there is no rain anywhere, let there be rain. And suppose people have no food anywhere, let them have food. And if people are sick, let there be no sickness. But only one thing is, all these things are happening. I should not know that it's all happening because of me." This is what he said to Krishna. He says to Krishna. So, and they also should not know that it's happening because of me. So similarly, because if they come to know that it's happening because of me, they'll follow me because of that. And if I have come to know that it's because of me, I'll become proud. Ahankaram will develop inside. So this is the state of jnani. Realized soul is like that. He does not want, or even when he is self-realized, he does not want to know that it's because of him that the others are feeling that benefit. He does not want that to know, that others are feeling benefit. Ego has completely gone away from inside. In other words, he is not looking for any recognition in this world. So only in that state one can be like that. So the devotee said to Krishna, "Wherever I go, people should feel happy or free from all miseries of this world. That is, but at the same time, they shouldn't know that it's because of my presence. They shouldn't know that. I shouldn't feel that it's because of me that they are feeling that happiness or freedom from distress. Because if I come to know, I'll become proud of that." So this is the position of a jnani. This is the realization of a jnani. Only it's spoken in a story form. That's all. Actually, he does not know. Jnani, when he is realized, he does not know that also. Others also won't know that it is because of him. And just like in the living entities in this creation, like the flower, it opens up. And the good smell from the flower, it spreads everywhere. But the flower does not know that it's happening because of its presence. That, and he also that does not give much attention to anything in this world. The wind is blowing and we don't take notice of that. Isn't? The wind is blowing, but we don't worship the wind for that, for the wind is blowing. Sun is shining, but we don't worship the sun for the shining. And we pay our respects to the sun, and that is for our health. We are not Surya Namaskaram, they call it, isn't it? Performing the obeisances to the sun god. But we are not actually paying obeisance to the sun. For our health we are doing that. So one performed this Surya Namaskaram. Namaskaram means paying obeisance to the sun. And he didn't get anything from that. So he got angry with the sun. So the next door, man next door in his house, he was performing this and he got a lot of money. So he says here, this person didn't get anything. So Surya Namaskaram, or performing, offering respects to sun god, is not for sun, it's for yourself, you are doing that. So we are not feeling any respect for anything in the creation at the moment. We are not feeling any respect for anything in the creation. So, and in material nature, none of them are expecting anything from us. None of them are expecting anything from us. you can see that in spite of the fact that we are so disrespectful to the nature in every way, still the seasons are changing, the rain is coming, sun is coming. Sun is not expecting anything from us. This is a symptom of a jnani. This is a symptom of a jnani. People always ask this question, can you show us a jnani, a self-realized soul? Now, in Krishna's arrangement, there is one jnani coming every morning and coming in front of us and showing who is a jnani, which is the sun. But unfortunately, we have not able to see a jnani anymore in that form. We have developed always in the form of a gross body only we can see. But sun's activities, if you observe, you will see sun exactly like a jnani and a karma yogi, he lives in this world. He comes every morning, executes his work, and he leaves this world. Same thing, the moon also performs its duty in the same way, without asking anything. But it is because of this, sun is considered to be the greatest jnani. So when you ask that, can you show me a jnani somewhere? There he is every morning coming in front of us. And there is a system also among the certain traditions, because he is the greatest jnani, suppose a person who is very qualified for sannyasam, very qualified, and there is no one who is more qualified than him for sannyasam, but he has not taken sannyasam. Imagine that state. It's called vidvat sannyasam. So if he has to take sannyas, what he will do, he'll go to any mutt and say to him that I want to take sannyas. But the people in the mutt knows that he is very much more qualified than them who has taken sannyas. So what they'll do, keeping the sun as the authority, they will offer him the sannyasam. They'll offer sannyasam to him. That means he's taking sannyasam from the sun directly, because sun is the higher person. But normally sannyasam should be taken from a higher authority. One sannyasa guru, they call it, isn't it? Sannyasa guru. So that sannyasam is offered like that, in that way. So what do we see? That unconsciously, all these activities are performed by the nature, quietly. So Shruti is saying here, Ashariram va vasandam na priya priye. This is what it says. Ashariram va vasandam na priya apriye. That just like the Chandogya Upanishad says like this, that just like the cloud and the rain comes, similarly so many energies in working in this world, the sunshine, the moonshine, the wind, the fire, how it all executes its own work in this world. The realized souls also, because his false ego has completely gone away from inside, his body, mind becomes one with the nature. Everything has lost its individual identity. Or in other words, you can say natural. natural means, as long as we have this false ego, when the false ego disappears from inside, particularly in the case of a jnani who have realized the truth, false ego has completely disappeared. In that situation, he realizes that this body, mind, everything is nothing but a part of the nature. As you know, aparaprakriti, isn't it? He realizes that. When that happens to him, then you can call it his natural. It's become very natural. It is his natural state. Once you cannot become natural so long as you have the ego inside. We have the ego inside, you are not natural. But once you have touched that sutram inside, the thread, or the andaralma of the material nature has become our body. That's why Krishna says, matta paridharam nanyat kinjid asti dhananjaya, mayi sarvam idam prodam sutre mani gana iva. That's what that means. Have you got that subtlety of that? What it's saying is, when you have realized the self, when you have realized the self, you will see that the your own gross body, mind, intelligence, everything belongs to the material nature. Belongs to the material nature. Because you have touched the soul inside, that the material body has gone back to its source, where it's come from the material nature. The mind, intelligence, everything has gone back to its own nature. That is what Krishna is saying here. Mai sarvam idam pradam sutre manigana iva. All these things are standing in me. In other words, your realization has come to that state now, that all this material nature is standing in me, in the spiritual form, in my spiritual identity. So, just like in this sutra, that it is a very poetical statement, sutre manigana iva. Sutram is the soul. Mani is this, all what you see, the creation. That's the mani. Mani means the pearl that is going through this sutram. So, when we have come to self-realization has happened in a person, what happens to him? He has come to the consciousness of the soul, pure soul, and spiritual identity has happened to him. And then he sees that his body, mind, intelligence, everything has gone to the material nature. In other words, the clear breakup has happened. Aparaprakriti and Paraprakriti has broken up inside. Inside it has broken. Not physically. Inside it has broken. Inside it has broken. That is what Krishna is saying there. That's why that verse is important. Which one? Matta paradaram na anyet. Kinjidasti dhananjaya. Mai sarvam idam pradam sutre manigana iva. If you keep analyzing that verse all the time, that's a good reflection on the soul. Good reflection on the soul. Then Krishna said, Rasoham apsu kaundeya. Isn't it? Prabhasmi shashi suryayoho. Pranava sarva vedeshu shabdhage paurisham narshu. Sarva bhudam. In all living entities, that soul is spread everywhere. Everywhere it's spread. Now Krishna is talking about individually over each item. Apsu. Apsu means water. In the water he is present as the taste. And in all pure material elements, earth, water, air, ether and fire, Krishna is present. All pure material elements, Krishna is manifesting. And Krishna says here, everything I am present. Some places Krishna will say it's a place of my opulence, Vibhuti Sthanam. It is called Vibhuti Sthanam. Some places the manifestation is more and some places it is less. Wherever you find water very pure, there Krishna's presence is there. There Krishna's presence is there. Manifestation is higher. That is why in the Tirthasthanam means wherever there is water, relationship with spiritual activity, water in the temples, tanks, in the holy rivers, all those places. So there Krishna's presence is higher. In pure water, Krishna's presence is there. Therefore, as I mentioned, that evacuation, everything inside the water is not acceptable from the Vedic point of view. Veda's instructions are like this. Therefore, don't offend the water. Don't offend the water. So, you can see that why people don't spit in the river, spit in the lakes, tanks and things like that. And also should not pass urine or anything in the water is an offense to the water because Krishna is present there. And because we have lost all that respect, we have become more civilized. Therefore, we have lost all the respect for everything. So that is why we were able to do things like in Ganga River, they are sending the sediments and all the factories waste, where without any problem, they are pumping into the rivers, So. And all the drainage from the cities also. We are not concerned anymore. We have lost that understanding. That's why. We have lost that understanding. So Krishna says here, if we have this resoham apsu kaundeya, if it is there, that we won't feel that kind of nature in us. We won't do such things. Now we have this devotion. Instead of Ganga River, our devotion is towards movies, cinemas and things like that. And if we had the same devotion for Bhagavad Gita, then it will be a different story. So, if the same devotion, if we had Bhagavad Gita, and it will develop in the form of bhakti towards the holy words, Ganga Jaya. We recite these verses, Ganga Jaya Mane Jaya Godavari Saraswati Narmade Sindhu Kaveri Jalesmin Sannidhim Guru. That's a famous verse for purifying the water. So those people who are chanting these verses and purifying the water, they are the very people who are pumping a lot of this waste also into the rivers and polluting it. You see? So it just shows people are doing it as a ritual, everything, but they are not thinking about it, what they are doing themselves. They are glorifying all the rivers. You know that this verse. Ganga Jaya Mane Jaya Godavari Saraswati Narmade Sindhu Kaveri Jalesmin Sannidhim Kuru. That what it says is that all the holy rivers mentioned, Ganga, Yamuna, Kaveri, Narmada, Sindhu, all these rivers, both Narmade, Sindhu, Kaveri, in the water of all these rivers, Jalesmin Sannidhim Kuru, who is present there, please purify me. We are saying that, and then we are polluting all the rivers with the waste. So what's the use of chanting this verse? We are asking the other way also. So this is a problem, that bhakti is not there. Only a ritual is existing now at the moment. It's only in the form of a ritual. In the bhavam is not there. Bhavam is not there. Only in the form of yukti, logic, it is existing. And after that, we come out of that. Even there is no bhavam, we will not do this. Rasoham apsu kaundeya. In other words, when we are taking water, we have to know it's Krishna we are taking from that water. Krishna is taking from the water. It is Tirtham. So, this is where the difference. Water and spiritual life has a very close relationship. Don't know whether you have noticed that. In all other religions also, it is like that. You see, this baptizing has come like this, isn't it? Why baptizing? They use the water, isn't it? While baptizing. So, just to show to us, then it is the very principle in spiritually that water has something to do with purification. In baptizing also, there is the Baptist John who takes the water, and not only in the Vedic tradition that it exists, in all other traditions also, water has been given this importance because of the power to purify. Why? In certain level, they are also accepting that God is present in the water. God is present in the water. It is from there that conception has come. So, just like Hindus are doing like this, Ganga Jaya Mane Jaya, and polluting the river, Christians are also doing exactly the same thing. They are performing all this baptizing, but at the same time not realizing that water that is used for purification, God is present in there. Isn't it? So, when we perform in the Vedic system, it is Sandhyavandanam, Arkhyam, Achamanam, whatever different things, that everywhere water is required. Water is required everywhere. And they say, I baptize you with water, and he who baptizes you with spirit is coming. That's a statement of the Baptist. So, it's like that. So, this divinity for the water, where did this come? At one time, there was only one culture in the whole world. That was this Vedic tradition that existed all over the world. But at different times, these separations have happened. But these things have not gone yet. They are still there. In a certain level, it is still present everywhere. We have, therefore, only recent times all these things have happened. This one, this religion, that religion, and all this kind of. Yatra Vishwam Bhava. Manu says like that. Manu's time, Manusmriti says like this. Whenever Manu has spoken in the Manusmriti, it's for the whole creation. He speaks Swayambhu Manu's words are like that. words are like that. So impermanence words are like that. So or in other words, that this samskaram or this culture from Manu has spread everywhere at one time. It was present everywhere. Asmadesha prasudasya sakashad regisul mana suhimya samanaha. So you can see this culture, this principle of Vedic culture has spread at different times in different parts of the world, and people have come and taken shelter of that. Even now it is happening at different times. You can see whenever Vedic culture is spread, people sometimes, quite a lot of people do accept it because of this understanding of the very basics. Rasoham apsu kaundaya prabhasmi shashi suryayo. So that waterness of the water, Krishna says here, that the water is able to remain as water, that is Krishna. That is Krishna. That very nature of being the water, that form is Krishna. You will see this, all material elements in pure form is worshipped in the Vedic system. Water, for example, without water, no purification. Similarly, all sacrifices with fire. The first verse itself in the Rig Veda begins with Agni Mile Purohitam. The word is Agni, fire. Agni is the first word. Agni Mile Purohitam. So you can see fire is given so much importance because when sacrifices are made, it is through fire Krishna accepts the offering. Krishna accepts the offering through fire. All the demigods also, the offering is done to the fire. Fire is their mouth through which they accept the offering. So fire is given important like that. Water is given important like this. Earth is given importance. Why? Earth is supplying everything. Everything is coming from her. It's a very interesting thing. We say earth has no life. The example is given like this. Two hair is standing in the body and they are talking to each other. And there one is saying to the other, the body has no life, I've got life. The hair is talking. Similarly, we are all standing on this earth and we are telling each other, we have got life, earth hasn't got life. All life is appearing on the earth. And still we deny there is no life in the earth. This is the problem. This is the problem. This is the subtle things of life. Two hairs standing on the body, they are talking to each other. And they are saying to each other that this body where we are standing, it has no life. Although we know both the hair is getting the life from the earth, from the body. Both hair is getting the life from the body. Similarly, we are standing on this earth, all of us, and earth is sustaining us by food, by nurturing everything and providing everything. And we say, earth has no life. We have got life, earth has no life. So this is our illusion. That is the main problem. That's why it says here. That Rasoham apsu. So earth is respected in the Vedic system because she is providing us, she is keeping us. Therefore we pay respects to the earth when we wake up. Isn't it? Padasparsham kshamasva. That we pay our respects to earth before we put our feet on her body. How do we say she has no life? How can we say in the same way? So earth is respected, fire is respected, water is respected, air is respected all the time. Why? It is air that is prana inside. If he withdraws, it's finished. The life is over there. Life air we call it, prana, isn't it? And that is a representation of the subtle form of the air outside. So we can't offend air either. Everything in its pure form is Krishna. There is no question about that. There is no question about that. And higher than all that things, now we have got water, the fire, the air, the earth, and then the last one is the sky. Sky is a representation of the sound. And Vedas are saying Shabdam is Brahmam. Shabda Brahmam. The sound itself is Brahmam. Without the sound, we can't do any transactions in this world, can we? We can't even communicate each other. What do? If there is no sound, does not work. If there is no sound, no transaction, no business is possible. And it is through the sound, media of the sound, that even self-realization happens. Because that's the origin of everything, isn't it? All material elements has come. So in its pure form, all these material elements requires a lot of respect and honor from us, isn't it? Because Krishna's direct representative, their direct presence in this world is through these material elements. And that we treat them as though it is something for dead matter, no value, abuse it or misuse it for whatever purpose we need. And this is how we lost respect to the nature. Because we became degraded like this, we lost the respect for the nature, and now we are calling for meetings and conferences and resolutions and solutions, no resolutions, Prabhupada says. So many resolutions, no solution, as he says. What's the use? When we don't understand the very fundamental principle of spiritual life, how we get ourselves trapped in all these things. Resolution and meetings won't help because the fundamentals are not there. We have lost that, the basics, in other words. The basics is what Krishna is talking about. You can see here also, in Ayurveda particularly, these things are given a lot of importance. It used to be like that. Modern Ayurveda also has become very much like a commercialized operation in many ways. Like allopathy, it's very much based on... But in the past, when there were great Ayurvedic physicians who have shown their capacity to cure illnesses, some illnesses which could not have been cured otherwise, they were able to cure. Because if the physician had tapasya, strength, in his spiritual strength in him, said, he used to take a little water and give it to the patient, chanting the mantra what is required, that was sufficient to cure the illness. That was sufficient to cure the illness. That is why. So there is a system like that in the Ayurveda. But we won't believe in that anymore. We won't believe in that. And we won't believe in that. So, in some cases, certain illnesses, there is a situation, a particular plant is necessary, or the root of that plant is necessary. You can't get that plant. It's very difficult. You searched everywhere, and the situation is very, emergency situation that is. This has happened. Many Ayurvedic physicians have done this. You know, when sometimes in the past, in Ayurveda, when you get a stroke due to high blood pressure and all, when you get it, that's a modern thing, isn't it? High blood pressure, when there is a stroke happens, as soon as you get the stroke, there will be a very strong headache as well. Very strong headache associated with the after the stroke. And the headache is so powerful that it is really a killing thing. It is so powerful, strong it is. So when Ayurvedic physicians in the past, what did they do when such situations happens? They will see that if it is unbearable, they will tell the patient or the patient's relatives that we have a medicine for that. And if we use it, it'll cure instantaneously the headache. But the chances are patient can die as well. They'll give the option to the family members and to the patient. Patient is suffering heavily because of the headache. And it was used to be so surprising that that plant what they pulled out was just a weed from the garden. They could pull it out, grind it into a paste and put it on the forehead of the patient. Immediately he comes out from that. And when he puts it in, the prayers from the physician is that it should work, it should not cause any complex situation later, that the patient should leave the body, because that's the only shelter he has. Before he applies the medicine, he prays to Antaryami inside very fervently. And if the physician has good tapasya or the good sadhana inside, his words will work. He has the capacity to cure the patients in that way. So some instances they have, even when they could not find the plant, they will pull out any plant and use that, the root of that, and grind it and put it at that time. So, if you have this strong conviction that Krishna is present in the water, water is sufficient to cure the illness also. This Sandhyavandanam, which is performed by the Brahmana, Brahmanas perform Sandhyavandanam. Sandhyavandanam prayers are slightly different for different Brahmanas. Smartha Brahmanas, who are in the Advaita tradition, they have some mantra for that. And Vaishnavas have got other mantra for Sandhyavandanam. So in the Vaishnava Sandhyavandanam, there is a, what do they do is, they take the water and they have, their prayer is that let this water purify me, let this water purify the earth, let the earth purify me, and whatever food I have taken, if it has gone for digestion and if it is creating any problems there, let a little bit of this water purify there also, that place. We cook in the kitchen, isn't it? In the, for the food we cook in the kitchen. But there is another kitchen going on inside. That is in the Krishna says that, isn't it? The food we have cooked and we have eaten that. That's the gross part of it. The subtle part is going on inside, the other cooking. That is that Krishna says there, isn't it? Aham vaishvanaro bhutva praninam deham ashridam. Pranabhana samaridva pajamyanyam chaturvidham. Krishna is saying, like your kitchen the fire is going on, in my kitchen also there is another fire, Jadaragni it is called, Vaishvanara. That Vaishvanara is Krishna. Aham Vaishvanara bhuto praninam deham ashrita. Inside each of us, Krishna is running that kitchen there with the fire Jadaragni, the digestive fire they call it, isn't it? Jadaragni. So that fire and that kitchen is working there. So after we have cooked and sent it in, he has to cook in that kitchen, and that is where all the subtle operations happening. From there, whatever food has gone in, Krishna has to separate it out. One part has gone, the most gross form goes as the, in the evacuation, as the stool and urine, everything, it goes like that. Finer than that, the subtle part of it becomes the flesh in the body. The flesh, it turns into flesh. And the most subtle form of that goes as the mind, becomes the mind. So the food that has gone in, we have only taken the gross side of it inside. Separating it into these three subtle things in gross and subtle forms, that is Krishna's job inside. Krishna is doing that for us. Krishna is doing that for us every day, for everybody, isn't it? Only when we upset him by things what we take, then he protests from inside. Then he protests from inside, isn't it? That is when stomach ache and stomach trouble all starts at that time. Because we have upset him there. That's why it is. And for people who are always traveling, eating at all different places, they're constantly giving trouble to him. Constantly giving trouble to him. And that is why it is much nicer if you live in one place and you have a regulated food, same type of food, without all. You can see when people travel all sorts of places, you are not eating the same food. You will eat, oh, let us try this, let's try that, let's try this, let's try that. Keep on trying one thing. This is not a good habit actually. It's a bad habit. That is, and it's better if one can live in one place, prepare one's own food, and prepare the same food and offer it while cooking in the proper way, chanting the holy name, prepare the food and offer it to Krishna, and Vaishvanara inside gets pleased with you at that time. Because it's pleasing to him. You are not creating trouble for him. Whereas one day you give him pizza, another day you give him something else. And, Yeah, so many things, isn't it? Every day he has this problem that you are putting him into problems. Aham Vaishvanara Bhuta Prana. He has got the capacity to do it, but you make his life a lot easier if you keep the life food habit simple. and which is not, as Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, that this is Vaishvanara Upasana, that serving Krishna. You know that people, when they take food in different ashrams, we sing Sharira Vidya Jal, isn't it? As prasadam, Krishna's prasadam, we take it. And if you look into that verse, you will see Jidindriya Tahekal, controlling all the senses. Jivafare Vishaya Sagore Tarmadhyay Jivayadi, you know the meaning. Lohamaya Sudurmadi Tagachidakuna Krishna Varadevamaya Kuribari. We are respecting it as Krishna's prasadam. That is the goal. But in many ashrams, when they take food, they recite this verse, Aham Vaishvanara Bhutva. That is what is recited there. That one verse. Some places. In some other ashram, depends on which ashram they follow what. So other ashrams, they recite that verse, then they recite another verse from Bhagavad Gita called Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmagno Brahmanahudam. The fourth chapter. Brahmaiva Tena Gandavyam Brahma Karma Samadhina. Which means that all this food, what I am offering, is a sacrifice. There is a fire burning inside. You are offering this food as a sacrifice into that fire, isn't it? And that is Brahmam. Knowing that this offering is Brahmam, the fire that receiving is Brahmam. This is a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, earlier in the 4th chapter. So this Aham Vaishvanara Bhutva, this verse from the 15th chapter, and this verse from the 4th chapter, Aham Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir, together, along with another verse, what is that? Ya Devi Sarva Bhudeshu Chudha Rubena Samstida Namastase 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 Namo Nama. That means, who is present inside in the form of hunger. Chudha. Chudha means hunger. Who is present inside Chudha Rubena Samstida? It is addressing Shri Parvati. These are people who have different traditions in the Vedic system. Vedic system. They will chant these three verses and they will take the food after that. Because eating itself is a spiritual activity. Eating, properly eating, is a spiritual activity. It is not fast food. This is what you have to know. Take away fast food. These are all the most ridiculous variations of eating. Fast food is not what inside is asking. What he's asking is a sacrifice from us. That's why eating is a real spiritual activity if it is treated proper, respected properly. That's why Krishna is saying like that. Some other ashrams, what they do? They chant the whole 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The yoga of the Supreme Person, Purushottama Yoga. 20 verses in that. They chant all the 20 verses and then they take prasadam. Because all that 20 verses is spoken about Purushottama, Krishna, who is present inside. So you can see how in the past they gave respect to food and eating as a spiritual thing, not anymore as a sense gratification, nor as a kuk, a fix for eat, just to eat and have to eat something. Especially when you can see this while working and all in the offices, they haven't got time holding the sandwiches and hitting the enter button in the key. Working. And you see they have no time because they are so busy. They have no time, they have no busy. And there is no chanting, nothing, just half an hour lunch break. In that you have to finish everything and run in to get your sandwiches from Tesco or supermarket. You have to get it. Where is the time to eat properly? There is no time. So we have lost everything in this way, one after the other, complete samskaram has gone from the human society. That is the important thing to remember. So people gave importance to eating so much in the past and they had time for it. Now we have no time, we have no importance either. Only what matters now is what's the taste of the food and which restaurant is the best place to eat and drink. That's only importance for factor now we have into consideration. So here, it says here that so water is a good vehicle for offering to Krishna. For offering to Krishna. So so here the even we many people agree then when water is used as a medium for chanting the mantra, the mind becomes very quickly focused on something. Because with the mind you are chanting the mantra, isn't it? Mind has got an influence there. When we say mind, what happens is that mind loses its strength, which means thoughts are brought down. Thoughts are brought down. Now, let me say something here. Have you noticed this? If you try it yourself, this is a subtle side of it, if you can look at it this way. See, you are preparing prasadam. You are expecting some guests at home. When you are cooking, you have been very, very careful while cooking. But at the same time, there was a lot of thoughts going through your mind of various anxieties in your mind. Various anxieties in your mind. After the guests have come and gone, I have to go here, I have to go there, I have this appointment, that appointment. And so many other things worrying you at home. If all those things are there and you are becoming very careful about cooking, you have cooked and given the food to the guests who had come, they have eaten and they have gone. And then you have tried the food yourself and you probably have felt that the food wasn't still up to the mark what you expected that. Leave that behind. Another day, suppose you have cooked the food on a day when you are extremely peaceful inside, not much chittavati inside, mind was very quiet, and you have cooked something without even giving much attention to the cooking. After you have cooked and if you eat it, you may find that the food has come out very well. Why is that? What is the reason? The acharyas are saying to us, while cooking, that shanti inside is a part of the process of that cooking. The peace inside is a food that is being cooked. So, if it is peaceful inside, that shanti has a powerful influence on the food that comes out after the cooking. And when you eat that food, you will feel that difference as well. This is why it is said that one should cook one's own food. That is the best situation. And one should cook with the right consciousness. And one should cook without any chittavritti. All the three things. If it is done like that, that cooking, and even if it is not offered, if you just take the food inside, now what we do, we offer it. Offering is over, let me eat it. No, this is the mode. That is not, should not be the mode. The mode is that offering should be done. If it's possible, you should do the offering. But even if you offer it to Vaishvanara inside, Krishna is present inside as the fire, Jadaragni, isn't it, Vaishvanara? If you offer it to him, that's why many great devotees, when they eat, they will chant the holy name first and they will eat as an offering to Krishna who is inside. You see, these are all the subtle aspects of our life, isn't it? And we have completely rejected all these things. There is no attention towards any of these things anymore. Aham Vaishvanarabhuta Praninam. It is in the 15th chapter, I think, that verse. So very important verse. And we will discuss it when we discuss 15th chapter. Aham Vaishvanaro Bhuta Praninam Dehamashrita. I think it is in the 15th chapter. Yes. 14th verse. 15th chapter. Aham Vaishvanaro Bhuta Praninam Dehamashrita Pranapana Samayukta Pajamyanam Chaturvidham. Look at that verse. Krishna is saying, I am the fire of digestion in every living body, and I am the air of life, outgoing and incoming, by which I digest the four kinds of foodstuff. See that? Aham Vaishvanaro Bhutva Praninam Deham Ashrita. And you have you noticed that? Pranam Apana Samayukta. What does that mean? Pranan Apanan Samanan. That means the pranan inside, which is inside, it has to do five different functions, isn't it? Pranan, apanan, samanan, udanan, vyanan. In five different locations, it's the same pranan. So the food what we eat, Vaishvanara digests it. Vaishvanara is Krishna. Vaishvanaran he is called Vaishvanara. He says, my plenary portion is the digesting fire. He digests it, Vaishvanara Bhutva, Praninam Deham Ashridaha. Ashridaha. That means the body, material body, all living entities, they are under the shelter of this Vaishvanara. Vaishvanara is the one who is performing that. And Pranam Apana Samayukta. Pranan Apanan Samanan. That process of making that air inside, the air what we breathe in and breathe out, the air when it goes in, it has to be broken into Pranan Apanan Samanan. The different roles it has to function. That is also done by Krishna. And Pachami Annam Chaturvidam. Pachami Annam, I digest it. That is that cooking in the Krishna's kitchen inside. What's happening in our own body. That's what he's talking about. So you can see here that Krishna is performing that role irrespective of we are respectful to Krishna or not. The Rishis, sages have told us, you respect all these things in life. That is spiritual life. Spiritual life is nothing more than this. It's not just sitting there, I've chanted my 16 rounds and I've done everything without any understanding of all this. This is all spiritual life. Spiritual life is this offering respects to Krishna at all stages of life. All stages of acknowledging this, that Krishna is present there at all times, doing all these different activities. But, so that is not understood. So, forefathers, they are present in the water. Sanidhyam. Forefathers are present in the water. So, in the past, Mani Mantra Aushadi, they say, call it like that. Mani Mantram Aushadam. Three ways of treatment for illnesses. Three ways of treatment for the illnesses. So, certain illnesses, for example, mental illnesses, particularly mental illnesses. It is very interesting to see how Vedic philosophy deals with the mind and the modern psychology deals with the mind. It's two different ways it is. The modern psychology, psychiatrist who deals with, or psychologist, he studies the mind, isn't he? He studies the mind. And after a long time, after studying psychology, what will happen? He gets into problems. He has got problems, psychic problems. It happens to him. There are many cases like that. Why is it like that? The reason is this, that in modern psychology, they become a part of the mind in their understanding the mind. Understanding the mind, they become a part of the mind. And they will try with their processes, study of the mind, because they are seeing mind as an entity which, although they are not located exactly where it is, but they think that they have a finite knowledge of the mind. One who studies the mind with the understanding that they will have a finite information on the mind is a mistake, because mind is something anirvajaniyam. It cannot be defined from the Vedic point of view. So in Vedas, when they study the mind, they remain separate from the mind and they study the mind. What is mind? Mind is thoughts coming through all the time, isn't it? That is what is called mind. And you are trying to study the mind as though it's a finite thing. It's not a finite thing. That's the problem. My mind is different from your mind. Your mind is different from somebody else's mind. Every individual, their mind is different. And no psychologist can come up with an answer for the solution to the problem. Because you just don't know how this mind will behave. You don't know. You can never find that out. That's why this psychology, many psychologists who have studied psychology, and their eventual experience after many years is that they also have started getting affected by that because of studying this thing called mind to such an extent. Because of this, that the Vedic system is that as much as you deal with the mind, you have to be separate from the mind. While dealing with the mind, you have to learn to be separate from the mind also. Therefore, Mani Mantra Aushadham, that's all three things we spoke about. That Aushadham is medicine, that is one way of. Then there is the stones, isn't it? Different stones which are used for, they got their power to have some influence on your mind. And similarly, Mani Mantra. Mantra, mantra means the mantras, what they can chant. So, certain thing which are, what they will do, in the Ayurvedic physicians, when they had to treat some patient who had mental problems, what they generally did was, knowing very well that it is not possible to get into the mind and cure the mind, like the body can be done, they will take some water and they will chant some very powerful mantra. And through the mantra, they will ask for the cure of the mind. This is the Vedic philosophy. Vedic tradition is like that. They don't treat the mind. They won't ask the person, just like, now if you have mental problems, what do? We go to the counselors, isn't it? Counselor, who himself needs counseling sometimes. Some of the counselors, you see, their state is like that. Their mind is so, they themselves are in trouble, but you go to them. And they will try to analyze your problem. They on their own have their own problems. But they are trying to analyze your problems. And they will want to break it up. And they will give you some solutions also. How you should. And they will they want some money basically. That's the system it works, isn't it? It's also everything to be paid. But a lot of times you will see counseling and all is not that effective. Counseling is not. Temporarily it may give you some relief and all that. But if you have a really deep problem with the mind, counseling cannot help. Counseling won't work. Suppose they have some deep problems. And in the past, when they had such experiences, what they did was, those who had powerful tapasya inside, austerity and strength of sadhana inside, they will take some water and chant some very powerful mantra from the Vedas, just like Sri Rudram, Chamakam. They are all very powerful mantras. They can straight away have its effect if you know how to chant them properly and if you had that sadhana inside. And they'll, through the mantra, they'll try to influence the mind. This is how they treat it. Not getting involved with the mind of the person. That won't help. That's not possible also. Mental diseases are much more complicated, isn't it, than the problem with the mind. I know one person who has is a devotee like us all, and he has been suffering from a problem from birth, this problem in his mind. And he tried all sorts of treatment, didn't work. And eventually he went to all the Ayurvedic places in India, tried for treatment, didn't work. He has come back and still he is having the same difficulty going through, unable to get it cured because of this. So you can see the mental, and his person is normal, every way it's normal. But something is causing him great unhappiness inside. Kind of a depression it brings in and gives a lot of trouble to him. So, Krishna says here that, so there you can see that Sri Rudram, so the water will take care of everything. So, for us now the water is hydrogen, oxygen and all that. So, we think that it is something which has no life. That's what we think about the water at the moment, isn't it? But Krishna is saying here, I am present in that water. There is no place where Krishna is not present. Prahlada proved that to us in the Bhagavatam. We'll discuss it on Saturday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.